It's time now for Money Matters with the Lewis family. Doug, Linda, and Deborah, owners of Lewis Financial Management, a Raleigh-based family-owned financial planning firm providing financial advice since 1983. Doug and Deborah are certified financial planners, CFPs, who can answer any of your questions about investments, retirement planning, and estate planning. Call Doug, Linda, and Deborah at their office, 919-872-7000, with your financial planning questions. That's 919-872-7000. Now, here are Doug, Linda, and Deborah.
Investments offered through SFA Inc. Investment advice through Lewis Financial Management. SFA Inc. and Lewis Financial Management are not related entities. And we are the Lewis family, ready to answer your questions tonight.
This is Linda Lewis, and thank you for joining us on Money Matters on News Radio 680 WPTF.
And I'm Doug Lewis, Certified Financial Planner.
And I'm Deborah Lewis, Certified Financial Planner. And we're here to answer your questions for the next hour.
Well, Barbara, this is Doug Lewis, Certified Financial Planner, and I'm ready to answer your money matter.
Yes, good evening.
How are you?
Fine, thank you. I bought a new home a little over a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if it would be feasible if I were to rent out this new home. And I figure I can get approximately 10% on my money and buy another home.
Well, let's hear a little bit about you, Barbara. How old are you?
I'm 50.
50 years old.
Right.
Married or single?
At this point, single.
So you're single.
Right.
What's your income right now, Barbara?
I make $32,000, but I get about $30,000 in gifts.
From family members who
right.
who are reducing their estate? Okay. So your salary is around $30,000.
Right,
32. $32,000 salary, and about $20,000 comes as gifts each year.
Yeah.
Does that come in a lump sum, or does it come throughout the year?
No, lump sum.
All right, now, what about your living expenses?
You mean per month?
All right, or yearly, either one.
About $800 a month.
All right, you have no mortgage in your home?
Right.
All right, so you're only spending about $10,000 a year.
Right.
So you're accumulating very rapidly.
Right.
And what do your investments look like? What's your portfolio? What do you have right now in assets?
I have about a $100,000 house.
All right.
About $85,000 in stock and about $150,000 cash.
$85,000 in stocks and $150,000 in cash?
Right. And I have no deductions.
That's right. You have no mortgage interest.
Right.
And you're not making charitable deductions. Let me see. First of all, when you say that you can rent it out for 10%, you mean of what you buy it?
Yeah, I paid $96,000 for it, and I can get about $950 a month rent.
All right, so you paid $96,000 for your house.
Right, $94,000 and put $2,000 into about $96,000.
Yeah. All right. If you rent it, where are you going to live?
Well, I was thinking of buying another house.
No, you don't want to do that.
Okay.
No. No. Don't speculate with real estate.
Okay.
And that's what you're doing. I also wouldn't go into real estate as an investment for income. But my question to you also is, why income? You got more income than you can use right now.
Right.
In other words, if you're only spending $10,000 a year and bringing in $50,000 a year, then your need isn't income. Your need is something other than income, right?
Well, yeah, it should be growth.
Well, I'm not sure exactly, but it's certainly not income right now. It may be financial security.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Who inherits your estate after you die?
Well, I really have no one. I'm debating.
No children?
Yes, I do, but I don't want to leave it to them.
All right. Do you have any charitable inclinations?
No.
All right. Well, now that's interesting. What that is a debate. If we're not going to go ahead and leave it to the kids, not going to leave it to a husband, not going to go ahead and leave it to... by the way, in the way of charities, you can do things like universities. There are a lot of nonprofit organizations, cancer research, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, the way I have it set up now, everything's going to my brother who doesn't need it anyway.
If you need help, call me, Deborah Lewis, 919-872-7000. 919-872-7000.
Well, one of the ways that we have successfully been working recently is using a vehicle called a charitable trust,
mm-hmm.
in which we set up a vehicle which produces a large retirement income for you, the donor, so that you can never outlive your income. No matter what happens, it always is growing on you. And then, depending on whether the donor, namely yourself, wants to pass it on to someone else or not, we then set up a second trust. In your case, if that's not one of your major goals, you could have a lot of interesting options available to you, because in setting up this trust, we also make you the trustee or the manager of the trust.
Okay.
But it lets you sell and buy in the trust and pay no capital gains taxes.
Oh, okay.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
One of the reasons people have problems, you said you've got $85,000 in stocks.
Right.
Now, do any of those stocks have high growth up on them?
Oh, yeah, they all do.
So that means you've got a problem, right?
Right.
As soon as you turn around to sell one, your accountant is going to warn you you've got capital gains tax to pay.
Yeah.
Well, we could set up a charitable trust, let's say with you designating that maybe the Cancer Research Institute or the AIDS Research Institute, or maybe set up a foundation in your name, which will go to different types of charities designated either by your children or by someone else after you're dead,
mm-hmm.
but then make you the trustee of this trust where you manage it. Then we transfer things into this trust, and then the trust, with you as manager, trustee, can sell and pay no capital gains tax, but all the income generated in this trust comes back to you.
And then,
and not only that, you get a big tax deduction for doing it.
Okay. And then upon my death, whatever's left, the
that's called the remainder interest.
Okay.
That will go to, in your case, it might be good to set it up into a charitable foundation and designate a family member for the foundation to choose which charities or which universities you would like it to go to.
Okay.
And it can also, I mean, sometimes also you get 50-yard line seats, by the way, if you use a certain university.
Yeah, right.
And you have chairs named in your honor and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, so then my biggest problem would be to decide who I want to leave the money to.
I got good news for you.
What?
You're also allowed to not even make that decision now. You can name one, but reserve the right to change the charities for as many times as you want as long as you're alive.
Oh, okay.
Isn't that nice?
That's nice, yeah. Well, then getting back to my financial position at this point.
Your money needs to be in mutual funds and pooled monies, possibly real estate partnerships if you wanted real estate. Pools of managed monies is where your money should be. We want to protect for long-term future.
Right. And plus, I stand to inherit quite a sum, too.
Well, if I were you, Linda.
Plus, you want to, you know, you want to plan for when you're going to inherit, you know,
right.
The estate. Probably what would be good, Barbara, is if you call the office at 872-7000, then I can send you some information, and that might give you a little bit more direction as to, you know, your own specific situation.
Okay.
Okay?
I will do that.
And thank you for calling.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Intriguing lady. The more she talked, more and more areas of planning kept occurring to me. There was
exactly.
cash flow planning, then there was retirement planning, then there was investment planning, then there was charitable gift
planning.
Yeah,
and I think it's wonderful how the lights start going on, that I need to get a handle on this situation and make this work for me. Doug, what's new in the world of investment planning?
Well, investment planning, you know, Linda, I think it might be good if we come back to just the basics for a lot of our listeners in trying to figure out exactly what is a mutual fund. Because, you know, Linda, a mutual fund is really an investment company. In other words, it's a company that invests in investments. It invests in stocks and bonds and things like that on behalf of other individuals with common goals, right?
Well, I would agree. And to understand mutual funds, let's explore six features about mutual funds.
Okay.
First is simplicity. In today's complex financial marketplace, mutual funds offer investors a simpler, less expensive, and less time-consuming method of investing in stocks, bonds, and government securities than trading them individually. Investors invest in the fund, and the fund managers invest in the securities. So the first feature is simplicity.
Right. Now, the second feature of mutual funds is diversification. By pooling different investors' dollars and spreading them over dozens of stocks or bonds, the mutual fund can diversify its holdings. A diversified portfolio reduces risk should some of those investments turn sour and increases the chance of picking up some potential winners. It's the old principle of not putting all your eggs in any one basket. So the second feature of a mutual fund is diversification.
A third feature of mutual funds is choice. A mutual fund investor has more options than ever before.
There are stock mutual funds, bond mutual funds, government bond mutual funds, tax-free mutual funds to satisfy all outlooks from the most conservative to the most aggressive. Of course, generally speaking, intelligently assumed risk increases the opportunity for greater return. Mutual fund investors select a fund with an investment objective that most closely matches their own. For example, one may want to maximize their current income or maximize long-term growth, or they may want some combination of growth and income.
Right. In addition, there are specialized funds, Lynn, which are available these days. For instance, there are funds that invest only in certain geographic regions of the U.S. or of the world, or certain industries like healthcare funds or technology funds or energy funds or bank funds. There are even funds that have adopted certain social criteria for people who only want to invest in areas of the economy designed to help humanity. So the third feature of a mutual fund is choice, big range of choice.
If you'd like further information, call us at 919-872-7000 or go to our website, DougAndLinda.com. That's DougAndLinda.com.
The fourth feature of a mutual fund is professional management. Once you've selected a mutual fund with your objectives, the investment decisions are made by the fund managers. These professionals decide when to invest your money. The money managers make these decisions based on extensive outgoing economic research into the financial performance of individual companies or individual bonds, taking into account general economic and market trends.
Yeah, and that's good, Lynn, because, you know, after analyzing all of this data, then the manager chooses investments that best match the objectives of the fund. And as economic conditions change, the fund may adjust the mix of its investments to adapt either a more aggressive or a more defensive posture. So the fourth feature is professional management, probably the most important feature.
The fifth feature of mutual funds is flexibility. While some investors prefer to pick a single fund and stick with it for many years, others look for a family of funds and a number of different mutual funds with different objectives all under the one roof usually fall under the category of a family of funds.
Yeah, in a family of funds, investors can switch then from one fund to the other fund as their objectives change. And the nice thing about family of fund investing is there's no commission charges. For example, they might want growth of capital during their early years and then later at retirement want income from their fund. Well, in a family of funds, they might have had a growth fund for years and now with simple telephone call, they can switch to a government bond fund paying monthly checks. And there would be no commission charges when they do that switch. Or they might have an interest in international investing and switch to a fund investing in European companies. So the fifth feature is flexibility.
The sixth feature of a mutual fund is liquidity. Mutual fund investors can cash in all or part of their shares at any time at the day's price. The fund is always ready to buy back the shares at the net asset value quoted in your daily paper. Basically, mutual funds offer just about something for everyone, whether you've only got $500 or $5 million. So whatever your objectives, safety or income or growth or tax savings, mutual funds probably have something for you.
These features of a mutual fund itself make us at least take a look and see, well, that's what a mutual fund is. And for those who aren't real clear, I hope the comments have helped.
Well, some people, you'd be surprised, I get people that call in. Listeners that call in at the office and maybe they're participating in some vehicle within their 401k, but they don't understand what it is or how it works. So it is good to come back to the basics.
My office number is 872-7000. If I can help you anymore, give us a call during the week.
It is important to know that you're going in the right direction. Anyone that takes a journey, eventually, if you've left port, you want to arrive at your destination, and that's what we do every day at Lewis Financial Management in Midtown Raleigh, helping folks like you, our listeners, face the challenges of changes in your, whether it's in your world, whether it's in your work world, whether it's planning for retirement, job loss, whatever the situation may be. Sometimes it's just a matter of just sorting out all your stuff, as some folks say. because most listeners that we've met with over the years, they're very diligent about saving in a retirement plan, or if they've inherited, trying to figure out, where am I going to put this money? So whatever your questions are, write them down on a notebook or do them on the computer, and then call us at Lewis Financial Management and work with a certified financial planner and get answers to your questions. Right, Doug?
Yeah, there's no other solution other than having a plan that encompasses everything. As you said, Linda, encompasses not only your investments, but your future retirement and your estate and all the other areas. And once you have a plan, then you stick with the plan. I have been enjoying giving away this book, The Middle Class Millionaire, recently. And again, I'm reminded how many of our clients started out 30 some years ago, not as millionaires by a long shot, and they have become these middle class millionaires. Some of them, of course, are enjoying still listening to our radio show tonight. But my point is that with a plan, it is possible and probable, and without a plan, it is virtually impossible.
Yeah, beautifully said.
This is Deborah Lewis, certified financial planner at Lewis Financial Management. Our number at the office is 919-872-7000. Call me at 919-872-7000.
Recently, a reader wrote into the News and Observer a question in regard to a financial question that they had. And here's the question that they wrote in. My daughter has an inherited IRA annuity and wants to cash it in. It was set up so she has to take a yearly distribution. If she withdraws the entire amount, she will be taxed about 40% because of her income and federal tax penalty for early withdrawal. Is there a way she can move this money to another investment fund that wouldn't tax her as much if she withdrew it? Now, Doug, Linda, we get a version of this question often and frequently.
We do.
So this is a typical situation. So if this is your question, call us tonight. Let us try and help you answer your own question.
Yeah, the IRA beneficiary is going to either be one of two kinds of people. There is no third. It's going to be a spouse or a non-spouse.
Okay.
Dogs can't inherit IRAs.
Okay.
Okay, neither can cats, only humans. And they will either be a spouse or a non-spouse. So a non-spouse, and it's typically going to be a child, just like this question here. The child really has three options, and three options only. She can withdraw the entire amount in 1 year and subject that distribution to federal and state income taxes. And indeed, it's going to be probably 40 or maybe 40, a little bit more than 40%. And that, of course, is the least desirable option. That's one choice. Choice number two, she can take it over 5 years and spread the taxes over 5 years. And then choice number three is to do something which is I would say it's getting more and more attention these days. Sometimes they're called beneficiary IRAs. Sometimes they're called stretch IRAs. Sometimes they're called inherited IRAs. But a child may not treat the IRA as their own. They cannot do that. A spouse can. The spouse can go ahead and take it 100% tax-free.
That's right. Roll it into their own.
That's right. That's right. If you have a $5 million IRA and you die, and you leave it and your wife is alive, she can receive the entire $5 million tax-free into her own IRA. Or even if she doesn't have an IRA, she can set up one right away and receive it tax-free. But the child cannot. The child cannot contribute to the IRA or make any rollovers into or out of the IRA. So what happens is now in this third choice, if she doesn't want to go ahead and pay the 40% tax as a one-time withdrawal or the five-year tax over 5 years, she can then go ahead and set it up as a beneficiary IRA. These inherited IRAs would then be titled such as, let's say, Child Jane, Beneficiary IRA of Deceased Mother Joan IRA. So she identifies it that way. She's not taking possession of it. And then what happens is there is something called a required minimum distribution, otherwise known as the RMD.
If you want an idea of how much your benefits will, in fact, be subject to taxes, call Lewis Financial Management. Set an appointment to meet face-to-face. Call during the week at 919-872-7000. That's 919-872-7000.
Now, Doug, I have a question. Let's say there was more than one beneficiary.
Well, if there's more than one beneficiary, maybe she left it to two or three children, it's the exact same story. They can take it as a lump and pay the tax. They can take it over 5 years and pay the tax in fifths. Or they can set it up as different stretch or beneficiary IRAs. But what I'm pointing us to is there is always a required minimum distribution, which is going to be taxed. And that required minimum distribution is based on the life expectancy of the daughter. So the daughter inherits the IRA, and now her distribution is spread over her life. So the tax, which has to be paid, is paid in little tiny, tiny little dribbles.
There is you were going to say dribbles. That was in my head.
Well, if these required minimum distributions are not taken, then you run into a huge penalty, which is a 50% penalty. Now, you can always take a distribution larger than the required minimum. You won't owe any penalty. It just may put you in a higher tax bracket. So spending a little time, little money for a consultation with someone like myself or like my daughter, Deborah, we are certified financial planners. It would be a wise move for this individual. Losing 40% of taxes makes no sense. And then the question of the changing the investment, which was the second part of the question.
Yes.
We want to realize that the IRA is a container. We always talk about investments in our office as chickens because chickens are a nice illustration. Chickens give off eggs. Investments give off income. So we call the investments chickens. Then we call the IRA a
chicken house.
Chicken house.
Because this is a container or a protector of your assets, your investments.
Right.
And the protection is from the IRS. So it's about taxes. So
right.
This thing called the chicken house is the IRA.
And the important thing is never to confuse the chickens with the chicken house.
Right.
Don't confuse the annuity that she wrote in about with the IRA. Once you go ahead and use a stretch IRA, she can move that annuity over to the stretch IRA, then surrender it, and that will not go ahead and trigger a tax event, and then get new chickens.
That's right. She can add whatever kind of chicken she wants.
She can add mutual
and
funds.
Usually,
she can do anything she wants.
When a non-spouse, meaning a child beneficiary of an IRA, usually, by definition, you have a longer life expectancy, so therefore you're going to have different investment needs. You're going to want to change those chickens.
That's right. That's
exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
You know, if you were
an annuity for a, I don't know how old the daughter was, right, who the writer wrote in about her daughter, but let's say the daughter was only 35 or 40 years old. An annuity would be absurd.
Right. I mean, you'd be much more likely to be in growth investments.
That's
so,
right.
So yeah, the chicken house and the chickens are different. You have to evaluate each and you have to know what you're, you know, needing.
So if you're out there listening, this is Money Matters with the Lewis Family on News Radio 680 WPTF. And if you have inherited an IRA, maybe you're the beneficiary of an IRA. Maybe you've accumulated $200,000, $300,000, or $400,000 in your previous 401k, and it's still sitting there. And maybe you need a second opinion about what you should be doing. Call us at Lewis Financial Management. We're in Midtown Raleigh. 919-872-7000. That's 919-872-7000. We'll be happy to help you with your questions about your retirement planning and what you should do with what you've inherited.
Anne?
Yes?
Hi, this is Doug Lewis. How can I help you this evening?
You can help me by telling me what would be the best thing to do with, say, $10,000. We're going to take it out of a savings account and wanted to invest it, mutual funds, And we were...
Who is the we? Are you married, Ann?
Yes, my husband and myself. And
how old are you?
40.
How old's your husband?
43.
And what's your income?
I guess around between 80 and 90,000.
Between the are you both working or just one?
Well, he works and we have a farm, so my title is farm manager. He kind of pays me to keep things straight. We've got some rental property on the farm.
So 80 to 90,000 combined income.
Yes.
And it's farm income.
Well, no, it's predominantly through his job with the university. But we do have a farm and we do have rental income.
Okay, so the job pays 80,000 and then the 10,000 extra is from the farm.
Yeah, in round
okay.
figures.
All right, I just wanted to get the stability of the income.
Uh-huh.
So the stable part is the 80. That feels pretty comfortable, right?
Yeah.
You're not going to be not much risk of being fired, of losing your job.
No, hopefully not.
Okay. All right. So you got a $90,000 combined income. Children?
We have two boys, 10 and 8.
10 and 8?
Yes.
Two boys, 10 and 8. We have college education needs there. What kind of investments do you have?
I wish he was here to talk with you, Doug, because I'm just kind of learning about what he does.
Well, let me back up a second then, because it sounds like, Ann, like you don't have a lot of numbers at your hand. Is that right?
Right.
Because my next question was going to be your living. Well, you may. A lot of women have a better feeling of what they're spending than their husbands do. Do you know what your expenses are running?
Each month?
Yeah.
Well, we spend less than we take in.
That's good.
Yeah, well, that's helpful.
How much are you spending?
$3,000 a month.
All right, well, let me show you. $3,000 a month is only $36,000 a year.
Uh-huh.
So
you
see where I'm going?
Yeah.
I'm heading towards that 90.
Yeah, well, we've been able to save... But what he wants to do now, and the reason I was calling, we were just sitting down this morning. He's talked with the financial planner.
Uh-huh.
But we were debating about which way to go as far as trying to accrue money for the boys' college education. We've had it in something very safe, and now we're at a point where we feel like we can go with something that something a little that would pay a better yield, yet we realize we'd have more of a chance of losing it, I guess.
Well, you really need to approach it from the view of the total financial plan.
Uh-huh.
And before anyone can make any recommendations, they need to look at the total picture. And
uh-huh.
The total picture is composed of about 5 different parts.
Uh-huh.
For example, you've given me one part. That's the income.
Uh-huh.
The next part is the expenses. You know, I don't think you've got a good handle on those. Right. But once a person has the income down and the expenses down,
uh-huh.
and then the third thing they have down are the taxes.
Right.
We have to know what the taxes are. Then the fourth thing we look at are what are the present assets, the present investments that you have, whether it be in cash, T-bills, mutual uh-huh. funds, municipal uh-huh. bonds, or whatever they are.
Uh-huh.
Once we have those listed, then we go to what are the needs.
Right.
In other words, what are the goals? Now, you've got 10 years to meet one college education goal,
uh-huh.
and you've got 8 years to meet the other.
If you haven't met with a certified financial planner, call me, Deborah Lewis, at Lewis Financial Management, 919-872-7000. It might be the most important call that you make this year, 919-872-7000.
All right, so we've got to look at funding for college education and funding for retirement or financial independence.
Right. Doug,
yes?
As far as meeting those college goals, can you say what is the, if you've got 10 years, what would you suggest to do with certain monies right now?
Yeah, I can. But what I'm saying is you can't, it's sort of like a Chinese puzzle. If
right.
you pull on one piece, you're affecting the other pieces.
Sure, they've all got to fit in.
In other words, I would not go ahead and have you put your if I knew that you had an asset allocation of $150,000 spread amongst 3 or 4 things,
uh-huh.
all right, and then if I found out what kind of college we're planning for, we need to decide whether we're planning for public or private school because the costs are radically different.
Oh, sure.
All right. If I know the number that I'm trying to plan for, then I can take those dollar figures, I can inflate those up 10 years to get to the future year that we need to have it available to start your child from college. And then come backwards from there and say, how much do we need to set aside monthly to reach that using an aggressive position like a growth stock fund? And then how much do we need to set aside monthly using a conservative position? Then there's a third way is I can say, what do they have in present assets? If they've got $150,000, for example, I have to get their living expenses today. Say, when do they want to be financially independent or when do they want to retire? If they say they'd like to be able to retire in 8 years, then I inflate their living expenses from now up till 8 years to get that future need. I subtract from that future need how much their retirement plan or their pension at work will cover, and the difference has to be met from their personal assets. I then go ahead and allocate that money into different types of investments and test to see if it will grow under a conservative strategy to meet that need. If not, if it's going to take an aggressive strategy, then I have to be careful about the kid's college because I'm taking from Peter to pay Paul.
So you could essentially plug numbers that I would give to you into a formula. Of course, it varies with, you know, the numbers that you put in.
That's right. Once I've got all of the pieces, once I've got the five pieces of the person's puzzle, once I've got their income, their expenses, their taxes, their investments, and the future goals that we're trying to reach, then I can start moving things around and on paper to see if they can make it under the most conservative or under the more aggressive, et cetera. But you have to see it from the whole view.
Right. I see. Well, one other question. Do most financial planners work on a set fee or a commission or so much a month or so much initial?
All right. It's a good question, and the answer is quite simple. If you're working on a straight commission basis, then you're really a salesman calling yourself a financial planner. Unfortunately, 90% of the people or more out there, probably 95% of the people in the Yellow Pages today who call themselves financial planners are either stockbrokers or insurance agents. And it's not illegal to do so, so this is part of the problem. But what you want a fee-based planner. That's a planner who charges a fee. That fee can either be by the hour or by the year. There are different arrangements they make, but your fee needs to be based upon something that's other than investing.
I see.
If it's based on you investing or you buying insurance, then that person can't be impartial.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
Because if you don't buy anything, he doesn't make anything.
Right. Right. No, I understand completely.
And if you'd like any further information, you can call me at the office. And the number in Raleigh is 919-872-7000.
Thanks, Ann.
Thank you, Doug.
All right.
Appreciate your help.
I do a lot of reading and found couple question and answers in the Kiplinger retirement report. And I thought a few of these might be interesting for our readers to see if it was their situation. One of the questions was, when a charity and children inherit a single IRA, and if the person would like the two sons to inherit, how do they make sure that they, as equal beneficiaries, do this the correct way?
Yeah, this is tricky. The first thing to realize is, can you do it? And of course you can do it. And as you said earlier, Deborah, there is, no matter what your will says, it has nothing to do. Your will can say that I want my IRA to go to John or Jane or whomever, but the beneficiary on the IRA is the overriding legal document. And now here we have, what about having two sons and a charity as equal beneficiaries of an IRA? Yes, you can do it. But you have to advise the guy who wrote in, he had the sons, so he has to advise his sons of the steps they need to take right after you die. Because the sons, if they don't make sure that the charity gets its share out by September 30th of the year after you die, then the sons are not going to be able to do stretch IRAs. And that means they're going to have to pay that 40%, let's say. On the other hand, if the charity gets its share by September 30th, then your sons are going to be able to take required minimum distributions over their life expectancies, and that would allow that IRA to grow tax-deferred maybe for decades. So I would say it's a great question, but you got to remember the charity has to take its part out first.
And now, I like what you said, Doug. It could be for decades.
If you haven't met with a certified financial planner, call me, Deborah Lewis, at Lewis Financial Management, 919-872-7000. It might be the most important call that you make this year. 919-872-7000.
Another question that was written in was, I just received an inheritance. Does that count towards Social Security earnings test?
Yeah, the answer to that question, Deborah, is no. Social Security earnings, the limit only applies to earnings from work, that's for an employer, or from self-employment. It does not apply to income from inheritances. It does not apply to pensions or investment income or retirement accounts. So the answer is no. The Social Security earnings test has nothing to do with this kind of income inheritance.
A lot of folks want to know, what do I do with my time? Well, the fourth challenge of the suddenly wealthy is, what do I do about choosing charities and causes to support?
Yeah, this is a big deal, because it may not be your passion or your favorite charity, but the arrival of this windfall wealth is also going to mean the arrival of truckloads of letters requesting assistance, suggestions from well-intentioned friends recommending, oh, such and such amazing organization, they need some funding. And if you cut that check, you're going to hear from them, as well as other organizations who are looking for benefactors. So finding a balance between not letting organizations know where the money is coming from and wanting to give, this becomes crucial.
Another challenge, maintaining meaningful friendships.
Removing money from friendships is often the first step for individuals who suddenly inherit wealth. So one of the most challenging moments arrives when a friend asks for a loan.
Yeah, clients experience this after maybe growing up as a middle-class individual in a rural town. They inherit millions of dollars right out of high school, and suddenly, the case I'm thinking of, he moves to a larger city, he buys a $1 million house, then his old high school friends visit him. Later on, they move in rent-free, and now the relationships, the friendship's awkward. It's like he can't charge them rent, and yet resentment is festering in his being. And so this matter of maintaining meaningful friendships, really, many inheritors have to find new friends in similar economic circumstances. And that's very important to realize, because you generally won't have the same relationship with your old friends once they find out that you've inherited a number of millions of dollars.
Now, the sixth challenge of the suddenly wealthy is, you might want to consider a prenuptial and cohabitation agreements as well.
It's not the most romantic conversation, but many inheritors have to have the conversation with future spouses around a prenup. And interestingly, many times prenup agreements are required by the terms of the trust or the family office distribution processes. But just the fact that someone has a prenup doesn't mean that it protects them.
Well, these definitely are challenges if you become suddenly wealthy. And the article said that the seventh challenge is to find a therapist, but really what you need is a financial planner.
Yeah, I disagree. You don't need to find a therapist, because the therapist is only going to be able to operate within the level of their skill set. But you need to seek out a certified financial planner such as myself to talk about the changes that you undergo as part of the inheritance process. You need to find someone who can give advice on not only investments, but taxes and estate planning, retirement, trusts, ownership, all these matters, and has worked with others in the same situation. To do so is hard, but it's not hard for us. Call us at Lewis Financial Management, 919 919- 872-7000, 919-872-7000.
You're listening to Money Matters with the Lewis family on News Radio 680 WPTF. And we appreciate you, all of our listeners. We are the voice of financial planning in the Triangle. Call us if you have questions and leave us your phone number and your name and your situation. Call us at 919-872-7000. That's 919-USA-7000.
Hi, Jeanette. This is Doug Lewis, Certified Financial Planner. How can I help you?
Hi. We're in our middle 50s, and we're about to make an appointment to either have a living trust or a will, and I don't know the difference between them. What would be the best for us?
Now, you say that you're getting ready to have a meeting with the financial planner?
Well, no, with a lawyer. We really need to have something set up because our adult kids really don't know what we have, and we just need to have the difference between a living trust and a will.
Right. I can help you understand a little bit, but my first advice is don't meet with the attorney first. Meet with a certified financial planner that will educate you on how it ties together everything that you've got, and then go to the attorney next. It will cost you much less that way.
Is that right?
Yes, because so many times I see clients coming to me with unfunded living trust, and I ask them, why'd you do it? And they say, well, my attorney said I should do it. I say, well, wonderful. You realize you've got a toothless dog here. You created a trust, but it's not going to do a single bit of good for you, because the benefits that you're expecting to get from it won't happen unless it's been funded. Well, the attorney never told me about funding them, and the attorney generally doesn't do the funding and so forth. So I would recommend that you meet with a fee-based certified financial planner. That's someone who you're going to pay a fee for. He's not going to try and sell you anything, but he will go ahead and look at your assets. There are many cases where you don't need a living trust and many cases that you do. There are many attorneys that don't like living trust because it cheats them out of fees later on. That's the view of some attorneys. And there are many who feel that it's the best thing there is.
Our number in Raleigh is 919-872-7000. That's 919-USA-7000.
Now, to give you some quick little down and dirty pieces of information so that I haven't failed to answer your question, a living trust is generally revocable, which means that you can change your mind anytime between now and the time you die. It has two sections to it generally. One section deals with the things that you want to happen during your lifetime. Those are called the living provisions. And then you have the testamentary provisions, or what you want to do happen at your death. And that's the same thing as a will. So it's got two provisions in there. Obviously, a will has nothing to do with during your lifetime. But a living trust has two parts. It functions both during your lifetime and at your death. The IRS tells you that the revocable living trust has no taxable benefit to you whatsoever because you can change your mind. But the reason people very often want a revocable living trust is that it avoids the cost of probate at death, because if you put everything you own in the name of this revocable living trust while you're alive, then at the time you die, you personally didn't own anything. This trust owned everything. And so there's nothing to go through probate, and all of the fees that you would generally pay an attorney to probate your estate are avoided. That's one reason people like revocable living trust. Another reason people like revocable living trust is that at death, you know how there's very often a 9-month delay to go through the probate process?
Right.
Well, there's no delay. Anything that's in the trust can be distributed immediately according to the provisions in the trust. A third reason people like revocable living trust are confidentiality. At the time that you die, only the stuff that you own personally, in other words, only things that are not owned by this trust, are in the newspaper or available for public disclosure. Trust assets are never available to the public knowledge. Another reason that people like revocable living trust, probably one of the most important reasons that I recommend them for my senior citizens, is in the sake of incapacitation. If you don't die, but you get disabled, if you get paralyzed, you don't have to use a power of attorney or a person doesn't have to have a power of attorney to continue to administer your assets, to take things from your investments, to pay your medical bills and so forth. Those are the reasons people want a revocable living trust. The differences between a revocable living trust and a will are basically the lifetime provisions. In other words, the what if I'm incapacitated? What if I'm disabled? There are obviously nothing like that in a will, because a will doesn't start happening until you die. but a revocable living trust starts happening today. But the other thing you need to understand is all people don't need revocable living trust, and all assets can't go into revocable living trust, such as your retirement accounts and your IRAs. And then there's the question of, do you want one revocable living trust for the two of y'all, or do you want separate ones? Really, you need to meet with a financial planner who can go over your assets. He's got to see everything. The attorney doesn't look at your assets. You need to understand that. When you meet with the attorney, you won't bring him copies of all your bank accounts and copies of your brokerage funds and all of that. But when you meet with the financial planner, yes, he wants to see everything that you own so he can then get a picture and tell you whether he thinks it's worthwhile for you to pay the additional cost to have a revocable living trust produced.
Now, we've moved 19 times all over the country, we never know if we're going to move again.
That's another reason that many people like revocable living trust. That's a very good reason that people choose revocable living trust, is because the probate process at death, if you die tomorrow and you own things in different states, very often you've got to go through probate in each of those states if you own it outright. But if you own it in revocable living trust, you don't. You see, each one of these issues is a question that really needs to be outlined much more in detail in front of a financial planner.
Sure.
Does that help you at all to get started?
That's great.
Some attorneys are excellent estate attorneys, and I know some really top estate planning attorneys. Others say they're estate attorneys, but they've got a little software package that you push a button and it prints out a will and fill in and makes them look like, but they really are not estate attorneys.
Mm.
And the financial planner can help you evaluate the competency of an attorney.
There's one brochure that I have that I'd be happy to send to you about estate planning. And if you'd like to call the office in Raleigh, it's 872-7000. That's USA 7000. I'll be happy to mail it to you.
Okay. Well,
okay.
That sounds just absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for calling.
Bye.
Goodbye now.
There is a major difference between money management and financial planning.
And what is that difference, Doug? Let's define that a little bit.
Well, you got an invitation the other day. You got a very attractive, glossy postcard in the mail the other day. I thought it was beautiful. It was
free dinner.
Well, I mean, I thought it was a very nice restaurant you were invited to, Linda.
Yes, I was.
Yeah, and it told you you were invited to a free dinner on investments and how you could go ahead and avoid certain issues with regard to your retirement tax. And as you read it, wasn't it beautiful?
It was. It was a nice invitation.
It was a wonderful, and it sounded like it was going to really solve all of your problems until you handed it to me, and I showed you in very light print, in tiny, tiny text, at the bottom of that invitation, you were alerted to the fact that this was an insurance company, and of course that told me you were being invited to a free dinner to come and hear about annuities. So this is not financial planning. This is a sales pitch to sell annuities.
Correct.
That's not what you want. Financial planning encompasses every part of your financial life. It should encompass no sales pitch of any investments. It should encompass how to plan for your entire world. It should encompass the world of investments, absolutely. But that investment portion doesn't come until after the end of the process of gathering the information, analyzing the information, what we call EGADIM. You remember EGADIM, Deborah?
I do. So E would be for establishing the relationship. G would be gathering the data that you would need to provide us as financial planners. A, analyzing that data. That's what we as the planner would do for you. Develop a plan would be the D in EGADIM. And then we need to implement that plan. And then the last part, of course, is what goes on for the rest of your life and the rest of our relationship. We're going to monitor that plan.
That's right. And we charge an hourly fee for that process. You are getting advice. You're not getting a sales pitch. You're getting advice. That is financial planning. Planning is much more than money management. And I think I hear the music coming. So everybody remember, your money matters because your financial future is at stake. And we are the Lewis family, here to help you.
You've been listening to Money Matters with Doug, Linda, and Deborah Lewis. Money Matters provides you with a personal financial hotline on any subject where money really matters. For more information, you can call Doug, Linda, or Deborah in Raleigh at 919-872-7000. That's USA 7000. Listen again next Saturday and Sunday at 5 p.m. for Money Matters with the Lewises on 680 WPTF.